Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. College football season is up and running. Jackson, how are you, man?
Just Andy.
Yeah? Good to have you back in the controls. A lot of moving parts here on the podcast. You getting the feel for that?
Oh, I'm getting the feel. I'll be locked in here for a bit.
Okay.
We got a little consistency going for a bit now.
Yeah, we do. So we're back to two podcasts per week. Tomorrow will be the NFL one. Today is college football coming up. Matt Eumanns. We're going to talk to him about the awful beats he had with Northwestern and Oregon, although he's going to be a little grouchy, as you would imagine. And we'll check in with John Murray at the Westgate in Las Vegas to see some sharp plays and what the reaction is after week one. And then also Brad Edwards, our analytics guru, will shed some light. And actually, there's a lot of buzz with Penn State on the analytics world. Will they win the Big Ten? That's very compelling. We'll obviously dissect the two ranked matchups we have in college football with Texas hosting LSU. There's been an interesting line movement there. And also Clemson hosting Texas A&M. This is likely the most losable game for the Tigers all regular season. So all that's straight ahead here on the Behind the Bets podcast.
Sounds to me like you guys a couple of bookies.
Welcoming back my buddy and frequent guest here on the Behind the Bets podcast, Matt Eumanns. How are you, dude?
I'm okay, Doug. I probably had better weeks than I had an opening week of college football. So I'm looking to bounce back a little bit here in week two. I mean, I thought my handicapping was decent. Could have been a little bit better. Anytime you have a bad week, it's a combination of bad handicapping and bad luck. And within a span of 4 hours, I lost Northwestern and Oregon, and that was kind of a tough 4 hours. So,
which do you think is worse between those two?
Does it really matter? I think the Oregon game was worse.
I think because, so, too.
You know, that's 19 out of 20 times it's going to be a field goal there. It's not going to be a touchdown, that's for sure. And, you know, the Northwestern play, you can almost see coming. And that stuff tends to happen. Just what we saw happen at the end of the Oregon-Auburn game is so unlikely that makes that beat worse. And don't forget about on that drive, Bo Nix dove for a first down and got it by like an inch. On fourth and four.
Right, they didn't review
it. And Auburn was so lucky to even have that chance to win the game.
Well, that's why I think anyway. Oregon, just because Oregon dominated the entire game, whereas like Northwestern looked crappy for most of the game, had a backup quarterback. But, yes, the final play was ridiculous. But, anyways, let's turn the page. Plenty of options moving forward. My favorite play, and I think my favorite play in a long time, as scary as that sounds, and I wanted to get your opinion because I know you're big on Nebraska, as I was for most of the year. I'm Colorado team total over, and it hasn't been posted yet. But with a game that's 65 and they're plus 3.5, so you divide it by 2, so you're looking at 32.5. You're looking at like 31, in the neighborhood of 31 for Colorado. And this Nebraska team was really disappointing in the second half, if not for their special teams and even their couple pick sixes. They might have lost the game. And I just think Colorado's going to be able to put up points with ease. Now, they also gave up a million yards to CSU last week, did Colorado. So I like plus 3.5, but I really like the team total over.
Well, it's interesting because Colorado's got talent on the offensive side, no question. When Steven Montez is throwing the ball downfield a little bit more last year, Colorado had such a dink and dunk offense. It was frustrating to watch, but Laviska Shenault is one of the better receivers in the country, and I do think you're going to see a pretty good Colorado offense. I thought going into the season the Buffalo was going to be a lot better than most people thought because everybody picked Colorado for last place in the Pac-12 South. You know, there's no question about it. I thought that team was going to be competitive. Mel Tucker is going to do a pretty good job at the defense. We'll see. I'm not as down on Nebraska after week one as most people because I think what you always have to keep in the back of your mind is the idea, don't overreact to one game. And I still think Nebraska is a lot better than the show last week. I watched the replay of that game, and, yeah, the Cornhuskers struggled, no doubt about it. And they needed the defense to score to get by South Alabama. as a what was Nebraska favorite last week? 35-point favorite.
Yeah, 36, I think, was the closing line.
Yeah, 35-21 win there as a 5-touchdown favorite. Everybody came away from that game saying, "Wow, this Nebraska team's just not that good. They're overrated. They look bad." You know, and then Colorado lit up the scoreboard against a bad Colorado State team. I just don't want to overreact to what I saw in each of those games, but yeah, I mean, your assessment's fair. I don't know that Colorado. I still think the Nebraska defense looks pretty good.
Possibly. It depends. I guess it depends on how we perceive South Alabama. But you're right. And that's why I wanted to ask you, because of the overreaction to week one. That's a dangerous territory, which brings us to our next game. And you and I kind of independently have stars aligned here, is UCLA. And both of us are big on the Bruins here. And this line's climbing up, whether it be the juice. And some places is off 7 to up to 7.5, hosting San Diego State. And actually, I didn't think UCLA looked that bad. And in fact, the scoop and score that was blown dead by the referee's whistle really would have changed things with Cincinnati. But I like the Bruins here against San Diego State, which really looks pretty feeble, all things considered, winning 6-0 over Weber State.
Yeah, there's no question that San Diego State has a lot of problems offensively. Juwan Washington last week carried 22 times for 55 yards. And Ryan Agnew passed for just barely more than 100 yards. And even going back to last season, Rocky Long had just a disastrous end to 2018. The Aztecs failed to cover the Final Four. They lost outright as a 24-point favorite to UNLV. Lost outright as a 17-point favorite to Hawaii. Got shut out 27-0 in a bowl game by Ohio. So these problems of San Diego State go back to the end of 2018. Rocky Long's had a lot of good teams. This Aztec team's not one of them. And I think, here's another thing. We're going to talk about overreactions, and we'll do it after week one of the NFL, too. I'll never forget, was it early 2000s when the Patriots got shut out by the Bills in week one, 35-0, and then ended up winning the Super Bowl that year. You know, a lot of people overreact to what you see in the first game. UCLA has 19 starters back. This team's going to be okay. They were really banged up in the first game, and Joshua Kelly did not play. He's crucial to that offense. If you recall, at the end of last year against USC, when he ran for 289 yards, that was a different UCLA offense when Joshua Kelly's running the ball like that. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who's a hyped quarterback out of Vegas, he's a sophomore, he can't play any worse than he did against Cincinnati. 8 for 26, hit one big pass play in the game. That was a 75-yard TD pass. Other than that, he did almost nothing to move the offense. Threw two picks, dropped the ball twice. I mean, I don't think he could be I don't think he'll play a worse game than that in his career. And UCLA still hung in there on the road against good Cincinnati defense and had a shot to win. I think the Bruins' defense looks much better than it did a year ago when they allowed, 445 yards a game. So the run defense is better. Obviously, San Diego State has all sorts of problems right now moving the football. I saw this in Phil Steele's book, and not that it means much to this particular matchup, but UCLA is 15-0 all-time against San Diego State with an average margin of victory of 24 points. I think Chip Kelly gets his team to rebound in a big way this week, and UCLA wins this game by double digits. I think I'm going to actually go to this game at the Rose Bowl Saturday afternoon. I want to see both of these teams up close, because UCLA coming into the season was going to be one of my surprise teams. You know, nobody really picking the Bruins to do better than, 6-6 this season for the most part. I thought they had a chance to be a lot better. I was discouraged by what I saw in week one. I thought Chip Kelly would have more up his sleeve, but at the same time, without Joshua Kelly on the field, I don't think it's really fair to bash the Bruins for that initial loss at Cincinnati, which is a really good team, by the way. So is Joshua Kelly going to play this week? I'm not sure. You know, he's been day-to-day since early August. And Chip Kelly indicated he might play in the second half of Cincinnati. We still don't know if he's going to play 2 weeks later, so I'm a little concerned about that. But I made this number without Joshua Kelly. I made UCLA an 11.5-point favorite, and with him I made it 13.5. So I think 7 is a bargain. This line actually opens 6.5 Sunday night, and I have I went ahead and played this even without knowing Joshua Kelly's status.
Yeah, so it's your top play. It's my top play. Like, I think this is a just get-well game. And let's not forget, UCLA was on the road, high-profile game, ESPN, opener. Like, I think this is just a much more conducive situation and scheduling spot. So I like the Bruins as well. And one, but let's talk about the big games, the two ranked matchups we have. And I know you were big on Texas over the summer. You were big on the Longhorns. And, I mean, at one point, Texas was -1, I believe, but during the summer and the look ahead kind of lines, but now it's 5, 5.5, and talk about overreaction to week one. Both teams looked okay, but definitely LSU, and there's a lot of value I would see in your eyes. I'm on LSU here. I'm a little scared to play it, but I like the side of the Tigers here. What about you?
You can actually, there's a couple spots out there if you like Texas, you can grab 6. This is not going to be my biggest play of the week because several sharp handicappers, I know, like LSU in this game. And I'm a little concerned from the Texas perspective about having so many guys banged up in this game, and, you know, it's running back, wide receiver spots. But I look at Sammy Ellinger. Sammy the Bull is one of my favorite players in college football. Last week he passed for 276, rushed for 34. He's going to have to put up much bigger numbers than that. I think he's going to have a Heisman-type performance for the Longhorns to have a shot to win this game. But if you look at, you know, I don't want to throw out cliches here because Tom Herman being an underdog, blah, 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 we've all heard it so many times. With Tom Herman, 13-2, ATS is a dog, 8-2 in that role at Texas coach. He's got 10 outright wins as an underdog, including that Sugar Bowl win over Georgia. I'll take a quality team like this as a home dog in a Saturday night situation. 4 out of 5 times, and a well-coached team with a quarterback I like a lot in Ellinger, it's going to be tough for me to turn this down. I haven't played it yet, but I see the 6 out there, and if I might decide today to go ahead and grab that. I know LSU was really impressive against Georgia Southern, but Georgia Southern could not move the ball at all in that game, and it was over really before you got to the midpoint of the first quarter. This new spread offense for LSU, I think, is really intriguing too. Joe Burrow, 23 for 27, 278. I think he left early in the second half of that game. So you got an up tempo, no huddle scheme. You got 5 receiving targets out there at some points. It's going to make LSU a lot more dangerous than it's been in recent years. There's no question about it. But still, going on the road to beat Texas in this atmosphere, I think is going to be difficult. Tom Herman in his career as a head coach, 23-4 straight up at home with only one loss but more than 4 points. I don't see Texas getting run off the field in this game, and I think the Longhorns are going to have the shot to win it. this is a really interesting handicap because I'm not going to fire big on this game, and I might end up doing a little bit more on live wagering than I do before the game. But I like home dogs, especially really good teams that are home dogs, and that's why it's going to be tough for me to turn down Texas.
I know. It's just that I think the time has finally come where LSU's kind of figured out the offense, right? They've gone creative. They've gone they're no longer lost and stuck in the old days of the fullback, and it's just finally like they're using the weapons that they have. And we always used to laugh about all these receivers in the NFL who were loaded from LSU, but they were never that great in college because they never had the right quarterback. Finally,
well,
I think the offense
never even heard of in college.
I know.
Doug. You know, they get
crazy
to the NFL and you're like, "What? He's from LSU? I don't remember him in college." You know, because the Tigers never threw the ball. I need to see a little bit more to say that they have it figured out and that they have this no huddle spread scheme solved. You know, not one game against Georgia Southern is not enough to convince me that they can take this show on the road and blow out Texas. I guess I'll put it that way.
Fair enough. Another game, the other ranked matchup is you like the dog here against Clemson. I was unimpressed, got lucky with my first half cover with the Tigers against Georgia Tech. I would probably go there as well in the first half just because I told myself I'm going to try to ride them, but I don't blame you for liking A&M here plus the points at all.
This seems like a really big number. I know, you know, I talked to a couple guys who power rated this because I had the number more around 14. I think 17 is a fair number, and you inflate it a little bit because the public's going to want to hammer Clemson basically every game. I don't think what happened in the first week's will deter many people from wanting to bet the Tigers in this spot. You know, they were sleepwalking a little bit. They knew they would beat Georgia Tech. No big deal. Trevor Lawrence had an off day. Probably were looking ahead a little bit to the Texas A&M game, you know. Kellen Mond had a big game last year against the Clemson defense, which I think was a better pass rush at the time. Obviously, that was in College Station. That game came down to the wire in a two-point conversion. Anytime you give me a top 15 caliber team like Texas A&M getting this many points, I'm going to be interested in it. And you do have to wonder a little bit about Clemson offensively here early in the season. If these guys have been, as a cliche goes, reading their press clippings a little bit too much in the offseason, because they sure didn't look very focused in week one. And you wonder if they need an attitude adjustment, a wake-up call a little bit. And maybe Texas A&M is the team that's going to give it to them. You don't see Jimbo Fisher get torched many times. And I think he's going to keep the Aggies competitive in this game. It's just seems like a little bit of line value. I wasn't blown away by what I saw from Trevor Lawrence and the Tigers in week one. And I think Texas A&M can hang in there. But, again, this is not going to be my biggest play of the week, because you're always concerned about, you know, the game getting away at some point. And that certainly can happen in Death Valley.
That's fair. So we talked about UCLA. And in that discussion, you mentioned Cincinnati being a very good team. Well, now they're catching 16.5, was 17 at the Horseshoe against Ohio State. I'm not sold on the Buckeyes being lights out like they stormed out of the gates on Saturday. For me, it's Cincy or pass here.
Yeah, I like this one a little bit better than Texas A&M, and I'm going to play Cincinnati, and I'm going to hope this number gets back to 17, which I think it will. I haven't bet it yet. But I'm pretty sure 17 is going to pop up again. If not, I'll play a little on 16.5, and then maybe live bet this as well. But Cincinnati, really good defensive team, and with a veteran quarterback in Desmond Ridder, who didn't play very well against UCLA. But you got a tough running back in Michael Warren, a veteran quarterback, and a great defensive coach in Luke Fickell. Who, Doug, how many guys do you think know this Ohio State team better? How many opposing coaches, let's put it that way, do you think know this Ohio State team better than Luke Fickell? Probably not many.
Great point.
You know, he knows his program inside and out. I think he's going to be jacked up for this game. You know, he's a Buckeye. He's going back to Columbus. Like you say, he's a great defensive coach. And I think Cincinnati's going to give Ohio State all it can handle in this game. If I'm wrong, so be it. But I really do think the Bearcats are going to roll in there and give the Buckeyes a hell of a game. You know, Justin Fields and Ohio State got out there great starting in the first quarter against Florida Atlantic. You know, but that's a poor Owls defense. And what they're going to see this week out of Cincinnati is going to be completely different. And I think I trust Luke Fickell here to show up with a great game plan. When you have a veteran quarterback and a good runner and Warren, I think Riddle and Warren can move the ball much better. Think about how bad that Florida Atlantic offense looked against Ohio State's first-string defense last week. Cincinnati's going to be able to move the ball. That's going to help its defense. And I think the Bearcats stay competitive. I do expect this number to pop back to 17 at some point before kickoff, because I think the public's going to be on Ohio State. I understand that. But this is one dog where I feel pretty comfortable because of the coach, the defense, and a couple veterans on offense who can move the football.
Another dog you're on, a much shorter number, is Fresno State at home to Minnesota. A game I don't think I want to watch, but it is a late-night bailout game, 10:30 Eastern. Bulldogs played pretty well, all things considered, at USC with the injured quarterback. They might have been blown out, not quite sure, but you're taking the three here.
Yeah, here's one thing. You know, I talked about overreactions, and I'm not going to overreact to what I saw with Minnesota in week one, because I did watch that entire game, and it was not impressive. And I can understand you not wanting to watch Minnesota at Fresno State. It's not going to be Probably not going to be offensive fireworks in this one. You know, last year when these teams met in Minneapolis, Fresno had the better team. Gophers got lucky to escape that game with a 21-14 win. I was a little bit surprised here to see this number because I thought it was going to be more in the pick 'em range. I really think Fresno's got the better quarterback in this game. When I watched that Minnesota-South Dakota State opener, the Jackrabbits should have won that game. They led by one in the fourth quarter. Ja'Pory Gibbs fumbled on an RPO play, and Minnesota cashed in with a winning touchdown on Muhammad Ibrahim's one-yard run with, I think, about 5.5 minutes to go in that game. So it was a situation where the Gophers were lucky to escape last year against Fresno, lucky to escape against South Dakota State. Tanner Morgan, you're not going to see him on any Heisman list. 13 for 18, 176 yards with a TD and a pick last week for Minnesota. I thought Fresno fought hard like you would expect, you know, against USC. That was a huge game for the Bulldogs. They knocked out JT Daniels. They had a shot at the end. Jorge Reyna has a long way to go as a passer in terms of accuracy. But he did throw for 256. He ran for 88. He missed several throws. Could have been a lot better. Hopefully he plays better this week. Jeff Tedford, as a dog here, interests me because at Fresno, don't forget, he took over a team that was 1-11. Okay, since he's been at Fresno, he's 22-7 straight up, 26-1 ATS, and he is 9-0 against the spread as an underdog. I think this is a spot where Fresno is going to have a great shot as a home dog to get the win. So I'm interested in taking the 3 or 3.5 here.
How do you feel about this game? I mean, look, I went to the well pretty hard with Illinois last week, and they got there with ease.
Nice job. Nice job by you and all. I know a couple other bettors, and there was one notable bettor in Vegas who was firing hard on the Illini. And it takes guts to do that because when you're laying a big number with Lovie Smith, you probably have to think twice about that before you put the money down, right?
Well, that and like we saw with Rutgers, some of these bad teams really want to pound the time, seize the opportunities they can to win big, and I thought that was one of them. I think this is I'm going back to the well with Illinois again at UConn, at the wrench. I know it's a high-profile game. Surprise game day is not there, but I just think they have enough firepower. It looks like Epstein's out for the year again, but besides that, they have plenty of firepower to just roll as well.
Well, Brandon Peters, the quarterback, beat out Isaiah Williams, we thought was going to be the freshman. We thought was going to be Lovie Smith's quarterback. Brandon Peters played well. I still think Illinois is by far, the worst team in the Big Ten West.
Fair.
But Illinois is improved from what it was, the past couple of years.
They just have a lot of speed. And
yeah, they're better. He's Lovie's upgraded, and his staff, they've done a pretty good job recruiting, and you can tell that they look more like a Big Ten team. The last couple of years, they looked like a bottom of the barrel Sun Belt team.
Let's keep in the Big Ten. You wanted to talk about Penn State here, and it's a big number, and obviously they hung, 79, and now they're playing the UB Buffalo, the Bulls, and I'm interested. It's a big number again, 29.5 here.
Yeah, and this number, by the way, opened 22 at Circus Sports in Las Vegas on Sunday night. I didn't get to it early enough. By the time I got there, it had moved up a few points. But I think what slips under the radar sometimes of teams like Buffalo is how bad they really were in their opener. And when you think about the Bulls, you knew they were going to have to be rebuilding a little bit on offense with Tyree Jackson, who was undrafted with the Buffalo Bills. You got to replace a guy that talented at Buffalo. It's not going to be easy. And when I followed the Buffalo game last week, I was like, this team's not going to be very good offensively. When I looked at the box score and the game was over, I was convinced that Buffalo is going to have huge, huge problems here against Penn State. Okay, so Buffalo beat Robert Morris 38-10. Matt Myers, the new freshman quarterback, had 3 touchdowns, but he passed for only 69 yards. Okay, so Penn State's going to shut down the run. This Penn State defense is going to be really good against the run. How is Matt Myers, who threw for 69 yards against Robert Morris, going to be able to beat this Penn State defense through the air? Buffalo's going to be in for a long day here. I think this 22-point opening line was way too low. Somewhere around 30 is more like the right number, but I think this is going to be a game where Penn State probably wins by 40 or 50. It could almost name the score here. This week. I was impressed by Penn State a week ago. You know, there was sharp money that came in against Penn State last week. That opening number was 47. It was 47 early in the week. It closed 41.5. Penny Lions led 44-0 at the half, and they beat Idaho 79-7. Idaho's a joke, so it didn't mean a whole lot. But I thought Sean Clifford looked pretty good. He's kind of a dual threat. You know, you can see why he won the quarterback job at Penn State in the spring. He passed for 280. He rushed for 57. I think he's going to be pretty good. The Penn State defense allowed 145 yards from 5 first downs. You tell me how Buffalo and Matt Myers, who threw for 69 yards against Robert Morris, is going to move the ball against Penn State this week.
They're not. I know Bear is big on the – took a flyer on Penn State winning the Big Ten just because he thinks these young guys will be seasoned on offense, will be seasoned by midseason, end of the year. Could really mix things up in the conference. One final game, and I think it's a funny handicap because it's Nevada coming off the big win. And then you have Oregon coming off the demoralizing loss. I think it's too many points. I know it's flat spots and all that. I just think 24 is a lot to be grabbing here. And, you know, they got to go up to Autzen and do it off a flat spot, but it's still 24 points.
Yeah, it's a really intriguing game to handicap because it's, you know, that loss for Oregon last week, that's like a soul-crushing loss, right? Because it's basically the biggest game you'll see. You targeted this game for months. It's a chance to make a big statement. And you lead the whole way, and then you just blow it at the end. So I think it's going to be tough for the Ducks to pull themselves off the ground, dust themselves off, and get fired up for this game last week. You know what really impressed me? And I know you were watching the game. You know, if you're live betting it, you had to be really impressed by the way Oregon came out of the gates last week. You could tell they were high energy. They were fired up. They were playing at a fast pace. And I said, man, this team's here to stay in this game, right? So if you're live betting it, you're like, yeah, this Oregon team's not going anywhere in this game. They looked legit. Justin Herbert, one thing I don't get now, Oregon was banged up with the wide receiver spot. No question about it. They were down some receivers and running backs. But when you get a senior quarterback like this, why don't you open up the offense and let him throw the ball downfield a little bit more instead of all these safe throws and conservative play calls? Herbert was 28 for 37. I thought they should have taken more shots against the Auburn defense. You got a veteran offensive line. Going into that game last week, Oregon had 153 combined starts on the offensive line, the most in the nation. Did a really good job against that tough Auburn front seven. I thought they should have let them take more shots. When you handicap this game, it's all about the Ducks and will they show up to play here? Because if they do, they got plenty of firepower to win this game. Nevada, don't be fooled by what happened last week. Nevada was getting blown out by Purdue in that game. Jeff Brohm took his foot off the gas. He made some really uncharacteristic play calls. Rondale Moore fumbled a punt return. Purdue muffed another punt return. They just did everything possible to give that game away to Reno. Carson Strong, freshman quarterback, hadn't played in a couple of years. He put the ball in the air 51 times, was only sacked once, not picked off. I think Purdue fell asleep at the wheel with a big lead in the second half of that game and just completely gave it away. Purdue should have won that game by 3 touchdowns. But I'm not going to lay this number with Oregon because we don't know what state of mind the Ducks are going to show up with on Sunday. And to me, this is just a really tricky spot for Oregon off a deflating loss like that. Doug, I'm still pissed off about Oregon's loss, and it's 4 days later. So, I'm not sure how the Ducks players are going to be able to be that resilient, you know, and show up and win a game like this in a blowout. And on the flip side, you get a Wolfpack team showing up sky high. Just had a huge win. These guys are fired up. You know they're going to play with a lot of energy. It's talent-wise, Oregon's 30-some points better. But that doesn't mean that's going to show on the field this Saturday because the Ducks might not be that excited to play.
Yeah. No, I I faded the Ducks last year when they gave the game away at the end to Stanford, and then they went out and covered and played really well the next week. So that's given me caution. Is when I ready to, you know, when Cristobal botched the timeouts and the kneeling and all that. So I, but you know what? Like, Cristobal blew the game in a lot of ways, and that's what we thought going in, that I didn't trust him as much. Now, Malzahn couldn't figure out the 2-point conversions, but it was the lesser of two evils in a lot of ways. Matt, never evil here. Always appreciate the insight. Appreciate your getting up early for the pod, the taping here, and I know our listeners do as well, and we'll check back in soon.
Okay. Hopefully we get a few winners this week.
Yeah, thanks, no guys. Bad beats. All right, take care.
See ya.
Kicking is for losers.
Well, it was until you get an awful beat on Oregon. So Gus Malzahn, unable to figure out the 2-point conversion chart or anything of it, and had two options and botched them both. And he should have been kicking us for losers, but somehow the Tigers cover the points. And I imagine it was pretty much mayhem at the sports books out there, John Murray.
That was actually really good for us, believe it or not. We had Oregon was a really public dog in that game. We had a lot of action on Oregon at the Superbook, and we needed the favorite Auburn, which is really unusual when you talk about what was the big primetime game of the week in college football, to actually need the favorite, something we maybe won't see again for the rest of the year.
Was it fun to get coaches back kicking field goals and PATs unnecessarily and punting? It was you know, football's back, right? It was a true sign.
I think the highlight had to be David Shaw punted from, I think, the 34 of Northwestern. That that's in the clubhouse so far is my favorite moment of the football season. But we got NFL starting this week, and those coaches are capable of punting from anywhere on the field.
I'm not joking. I've said this before. I think there was a bowl game when it was, I think it was TCU-ASU, if I'm not mistaken, where the you get a touchdown to go up 5 and you kick it with like 2 minutes to go and to go up 6. And it's like, that's a fireable offense, and I think ASU lost because of it. I'm going off
memory. I agree with you.
But those are two fireable offenses.
I mean, I know that on the first one, they got, I think, a false start penalty, so they would have gone for 2 from the 7-yard line. So what?
Yeah.
They can't get 7 yards? Who cares? That shouldn't have even been a factor. I mean, maybe if they'd got, like, a personal foul penalty and they were back at the 17, then maybe you would...
And
you
9.5 minutes left. Right.
Right. But from the 7-yard line, you got to go for that. And then certainly after the last touchdown, which put them up, what, 5? And they kicked an extra point to go up 6? What is the difference between 5 and 6 there? Then they execute one of the worst kickoffs in the history of college football, where they try to keep it away from a guy with a short kick. It goes to the guy anyway, and Oregon gets to run a play from their 36-yard line. And luckily for them, Herbert throws the ball into the stands, and the game's over. But both coaches were awful down the stretch there. Mario Cristobal already getting a reputation as a guy that can't manage the end-of-game situations.
Well, that started last year in the Stanford game, where they botched it and had the game won, so...
That was one of our worst beats of the year last year in college football in terms of like a big dollar swing for us at the book, and pretty much everybody that works here bet on that game as well. So this year we got some revenge a little bit because the house did need Auburn in this spot. But Mario Cristobal, he's got a very talented roster there, an NFL quarterback, but it doesn't seem like he can manage these end of game scenarios at all.
Well, I had a huge middle on that Stanford-Oregon game that got blown up because of that. So we won't go there. Let's turn the page. Interesting that some of the sharp money was dead money last week on some games, and others were really good. It's always interesting, especially the first week when you have some really funny, like sounding schools you never thought existed getting some money because of those FCS opponents. But what stands out at the counter so far?
You're talking about, you want to
this
go
week.
Into this week?
Yeah,
or, this week. Well, I mean, I thought we were going to unpack some of last week's games. We can jump right into it. I'd say Maryland-Syracuse would be the one that's seen the most line move. We're all the way up to Maryland -2 right now at home against Syracuse. We opened this Maryland +3. So this number has swung through 0, and now the Terrapins are favored. Maryland coming off a 79-0 win against Howard, and Syracuse struggled a little bit against Liberty last week, but I'm a little surprised to see the Terrapins favored in this spot. It is a look-ahead spot, though, for Syracuse. They've got the big game against Clemson next Saturday.
Yeah, I like Syracuse in that one. That line seems out of whack. I'm not going to be changing my opinion too much on Maryland winning that game last week in a blowout fashion. What else?
You don't want to overreact too much. I agree with you, Doug. You don't want to overreact too much to Maryland running up the score against Howard And I'm a big fan of Dino Babers, the Syracuse coach, but their offense definitely did struggle last week.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And, you know, Howard, that powerhouse that went to UNLV and won, so you can't, a couple years ago, 40-something point dogs. What are some other getting some interesting sharp action?
I'll give you one that I think you're going to like, because it's the isolated 8 a.m. game on the West Coast. Ooh. Saturday morning, 11 a.m. on the East Coast. Seeing a couple sharp guys take Ohio plus 6.5. They're on the road against Pittsburgh. We're down to 5.5 here on that game. I don't have an opinion on it, but I know you love those isolated games.
Yeah, anytime you can get early action, as if Saturday slate isn't enough, you got to start an hour earlier. Because most people go to the EPL. It's not EPL, but it's nice. I actually like, I have a guy who has, he sent me two plays all week, and it's Syracuse and Pitt. So it's just funny that it's the two games
Syracuse
you mentioned.
Syracuse and Pitt.
It's the two games you mentioned, and it's the opposite side.
Well, I think the Syracuse number is a bit of an overreaction, and we can get into another game later on the board that I think is an overreaction, but that's just where the money has come in so far. I mean, we took a bet yesterday from a guy that I really respect. He took Army plus 23. They're on the road against Michigan in Ann Arbor, and you know, it's hard to picture Army scoring after you saw the way that the Rice defense held Army in check for four quarters, something we almost never see. It really is hard to picture Army getting on the board against that Michigan defense, but I can't argue with what I saw. The guy that took that is a guy that I really have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, that was the one real stinker I had on the column and on the podcast was Army. I thought they'd just run at will against Rice, and you know what? It's nice of some of the listeners and readers get to tweet me when I go 4-1 and all they can focus on is the Army Rice loser I had. But hey,
that was a shocking. You got to give Rice's defense a lot of credit. I mean, you don't see teams hold Army down like that for four quarters on the ground.
Well,
and I give Army a lot of credit because they went for it on 4th-and-1 from their own 11.
That was awesome. That was right off the bat early.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite play of the week. And then the best part was Rice stuffs them, and then Rice kicks a short field goal and the kid missed.
Yeah.
So that was probably my favorite sequence of opening weekend of college football.
And he missed another chip shot early.
Yeah.
So, look, the script that was concerning with me was like Rice, obviously coming off a horrible year, not much expected, was like fixated on the option all summer, right? That was their big game, was home, maybe they'd get a win. So that was like I'm very curious. Now, it's interesting because Rice is catching a lot of points again this week. And I can't, from a professional, like, credibility standpoint, can't say I'm taking Wake again, like, keep chasing, right? But you know I'm playing Wake again. Like, I want my money back, right? But I'm not going to, like, post the pick or whatever, right? Like, I can't just have egg on my face and Rice almost. But, like, that's a game I'm really tempted to hit again. Because I don't think Rice is very good. There's not much that impressed me in that game. I think it was... their defensive front was well-schooled on the option, kind of like a bowl game. They had time to prepare. But I'm still believing that Rice isn't very good.
Well, there's also a possibility that Army was looking ahead to this Michigan game.
Correct.
We got to think about that. What do you think of that other Friday game? I think that's probably one of the better Friday games we're going to see this year in college football. Marshall plus 11.5 at Boise State right now. It's a tough spot for Boise State. They went to Florida last week. They got the location change from Jacksonville to Tallahassee. They've got the incredible rally on the road there against the Seminoles. Now they got to go home and play a Marshall team that maybe people don't realize how good they are.
Yeah, there's a couple really interesting handicaps, so to speak. That is one with the Boise State big win on the road and all that. The other game that Humans and I just discussed was Oregon hosting Nevada, right? Like, how does Oregon pick themselves up off the mat after last week's demoralizing loss? And then Nevada.
How does Humans pick himself up off the mat? I saw Humans on Sunday night. He had bet Northwestern and Oregon on Saturday. And speaking of people that need to pick themselves up off the mat,
he's not happy.
Matt Humans.
He is not happy. Let's just leave it at that.
What did he? You know, I actually have a play I was going to mention in that Nevada Oregon game, but I'll let you tell me first. What was Matt's take?
I leaned
on that
to the
game?
Dog. That was my play. He said it's a pass for him, but like on paper, one team's way better. But.
Now, we had a guy I respect laid 23. We moved to 24 off that gentleman's bet. Now, it's a tough spot for Oregon because they're coming off just such a demoralizing loss. And then the other team in that game, Auburn, we've seen sharp guys taking the dog Tulane at Auburn. Hmm. They took 19.5. They took 18.5. We're down to 18 on that game. you know, it's a tough spot for Auburn, too. They're coming off of a very emotional win. Before they get into the SEC West schedule, you couldn't blame them a little bit for looking past an opponent like Tulane, especially at home. So I thought that was interesting money coming in on the dog in that game.
I can see that. That's a fair point on that.
That one made sense. Another one we took some money on, another big dog we took money on, I should say, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Group took 17 on the Bearcats. Luke Fickell done such a great job with Cincinnati, coming off of a good win over UCLA. We're down to 16.5. First real test for the new Ohio State coaching staff, new quarterback Justin Fields at home against Luke Fickell and a Cincinnati team that knows them very well.
Yeah, no, you can't fault anyone for that one as well. Any other sharp action?
Yeah, I'll give you one that I found interesting, BYU plus 3.5. They're on the road at Tennessee. Tennessee, about a team with its back to the wall. They're coming off of what had to be the worst loss of the week in college football. They lost at home to Georgia State. And Jeremy Pruitt, this might be a must-win game for him in Knoxville. BYU really... I thought their game against Utah last Thursday night was a lot closer than the final score indicated. Utah had two defensive touchdowns in that game. I thought BYU's defense actually held in very well in that game. And we saw sharp money come in, take three and a hook at Tennessee Saturday.
Yeah, no, it's funny. One, popular national radio host texted me. He's like, "I got anything in the afternoon games?" And I was like, "Take Georgia State." they went outright
Yeah, I don't know if I would have been able to predict that one. That was a good call.
Well, a few minutes in,
a terrible loss.
I was on a group text. I'm like, my wild prediction today is Georgia State wins this game outright because we hadn't seen a big upset yet. So there's always going to be like one or two, right? And then later we got Wyoming and stuff like that. But I was like, and if you think about it, Georgia State, and even a couple of years ago, remember Jacksonville State took Auburn to overtime in week one. Or week two, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And that's Jacksonville State in Alabama, not in Florida. A lot of these guys all played against each other in high school. And if they're, it's like those products going to Georgia State and Jacksonville State and some of these others are much better than like UMass getting their guys in the New England area, right? Like they're better high school football players in that region. So it's harder to recruit and hit every recruit, right? Like App State, right? When App State beat Michigan famously over a decade ago. Like, they're recruiting in the southeastern part of the United States. I mean, App State's located in South Carolina, or North Carolina, excuse me. So it's just, you just have to factor that in because it's really hard to project 16, 17, 18-year-olds. So sometimes you get, like, they had a star quarterback, things like that. So that's why I thought Georgia State, and it was due. You know, I just had the feeling of something was ripe for a huge upset.
The due factor, and really...
Well, just over the course of all these games, right? Like, the 15-team money line parlay was not going to hit.
Well, thankfully for us, it didn't hit, but there were a lot of favorites that came in on Saturday that cost us a few bucks. Alabama probably being the biggest one of that. There was a roar from the crowd when Alabama broke that late touchdown run to cover the spread. Speaking of Alabama, I don't know that we'll see too much money on that game, to tell you the truth. Alabama currently a 55-point favorite. People don't really like to get involved too much on these big point spreads is the honest truth. Like, there's just too much to lay, and people usually look somewhere else to put their money when there's so many games to choose from. Why get involved in a game with a point spread that big?
Right. That I can understand. All right, man. Well, look, always good to catch up, dip our toe into the college discussion, but I'm primed for tomorrow's NFL podcast.
Yeah, ready to talk NFL tomorrow. And the final note I was going to give you, careful with that Texas A&M Clemson game, because so far everybody here is on Texas A&M at Clemson.
Yeah.
I'll give you the bat signal on Saturday if I have it, but it's all A&M money. Now, it's very early. We're recording this on Wednesday morning, but so far all Aggies. We don't have a single straight bet ticket on Clemson.
Oh, I'm excited. What's the ticket count ratio then? What to zero?
I think it's like 11-0.
Okay, so it's last time I looked.
Well, it's very early now because we got to remember most of the bets are parlays right now, so we're only looking at straight bets. And then the other big game, LSU. That number, we've mostly just been going with the market on that one, drifting up. LSU, a 6-point favorite on the road against Texas. That great doubleheader of college football. I'm very excited for Saturday college football, but we'll talk tomorrow about the NFL.
All right, sounds good, Murray. Always good checking in.
All right, bud. I'll talk to you later.
Bet Alert.
That's what we say when we bring in our man, Brad Edwards. How are you, dude?
I'm doing well. Feeling really nerdy, and let's get this going.
Yeah. So we'll talk FPI. You told me an interesting stat before we started recording, so we'll get into that momentarily. But I want to talk about just the two big games, especially LSU-Texas. LSU's a team that we talked about going into the season, how you felt they were legit and had all the makings of sort of a sleeper, if you will, in this national championship discussion even. And they certainly looked the part in the week one, albeit against an inferior opponent.
Yeah, we've been hearing for about 5 years now that LSU is going to open up the offense. Here we go. All right, we're going to use all these athletes.
Yeah, Cameron's coming in.
Yeah, and then the moment of truth arrives, and they get back in that phone booth and try to push people around. And it especially doesn't work against Alabama. And I think they've finally come to terms with, look, we cannot beat Alabama playing this way, so we need to change our philosophy. Other teams have beaten Alabama, and most of them do it by slinging the ball around. So it looks like LSU is finally committed to this. Now, we're gonna find out for real this weekend against Texas, because they did some things against Georgia Southern that were not typical of LSU. Not just the percentage of time they threw the ball, but the way that they used the short pass, the controlled passing game as part of the running game, you know, getting the running backs involved in the passing game. That's all new for LSU, but the question is, was this a smokescreen because they know they have Texas week two and they want to show them something completely different from what they're going to see? Or was this a real indication of what LSU is going to be?
Yeah, well, they do it when the games are close and within a reasonable opponent.
And I don't think there's any question that there's some element of this that is going to be, you know, standard for their offense this season. But how much of it, they weren't showing Texas everything they're going to do. There was no need to. They knew that going into the game. They weren't going to have to show everything to beat Georgia Southern. So I'm really fascinated to see what they've held back, because as impressive as it was, Georgia Southern wasn't capable of pressuring the quarterback the way that Texas will be able to. And so they're obviously going to have to do some things different, but it was definitely a new look LSU offense, and it was very effective.
Maybe they were proving it to themselves, right? Like, maybe they're like, hey, let's actually do this in the game. So maybe that was the thought process behind it.
And if you look at it, I believe it was 22 of Joe Burrow's 27 passes were within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So when I say short passing game, I mean, that's what was going on. We're just, you know, dumping the ball to guys and letting them get yards after the catch, which, you know, logic tells you is going to work a lot better against Georgia Southern than it will against the athletes that Texas has. And so that's why I believe they got something else up their sleeves. You're not going to dink and dunk and, you know, throw crossing routes and all that stuff successfully against the Longhorns. So
we think. You never know.
Well, you do never know. I mean, look, Texas, we've talked about this a lot during the offseason. One of the reasons that I've liked LSU in this game for months is because of the experience factor. I mean, number one, I think at this stage, as well as Tom Herman has recruited the last 2 years, LSU, I think, still has a little bit more talent than Texas does. But the bigger thing is they have a lot more experience. They have about twice the number of returning starters. And that is a legit question, you know, with Texas. Are they that good on defense with as few guys as they have coming back? We'll see.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. That line has been all over the place. This summer, Texas was even favored by one, and it's now LSU minus 5.5.
That surprised me a little bit. I thought that number would stay around a field goal, just because if you just look at the scoreboard,
yeah, Texas look good too,
I think you know, and this is not news to you, but the sharps are paying closer attention than everyone else, because most people are just looking at the scoreboard, and Texas looks like they had a really impressive win also. But you start to dive into it a little bit more, you see, okay, you know what, Texas had a few things go their way. It wasn't complete dominance the way that it was for LSU.
Yeah, no, I was, but it's funny, you know, as soon after watching Saturday, I'm like, you know what, I'm on LSU next week, and then hence the number goes up.
So yeah.
I kind of anticipated the eye test. But yeah, there is some sharp money on LSU. Now, it's not always 100%. There's obviously some on the other side, but that was definitely sort of the people I talked to a lot definitely like that side. Although Matt Eumanns earlier in the show looks at Texas, but he's sort of scared to jump in just because he respects the people that have also sort of collaborated and like that Tigers side. The other Tigers in action in a ranked matchup is Clemson, and this is always fun. You know, Clemson was not really all in against their opponent and everything, and Texas A&M coming in, catching a lot of points, and I think Clemson wins convincingly. It's just tough to hang with a team for four quarters that good. But there could be some disinterest still with Clemson that carries over from the first week.
Yeah, there looked to be some of that in the opener. And whether that was just getting the rust off, whatever you want to call
totally
it.
Totally fair, if that's
the case. They were out of sync offensively for most of that game. And they still scored 52 points on another Power 5 team. That's kind of scary if you think about it. And a lot of fluke plays,
but you're right.
Yeah, and that plays into what you're saying, which is that, look, if they come out extremely focused and they click offensively, it could get ugly. And I see that being very much in play. It's also possible that A&M could be the type of team that can match up with them athletically in a way that very few teams on their schedule can. FPI will say, and some people would look to next week when Clemson goes to Syracuse and say that's the game, but FPI says that this is the toughest game of the regular season for Clemson. Like this, if you're looking at percent chance to win, this is their lowest percentage chance to win of any game from now until the playoff.
And what is the percentage?
And it was in the 70s. Okay. Like, I think it was, I want to say it was like 78.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not too different from Vegas. It's in that same.
So it's like a minus 300 favorite.
17 point range.
That would be 75%.
Yeah. So, there is a recognition that number one, Clemson is a lot better than Texas A&M. But there's also that reality that A&M has some very good players and on offense, especially with Kellen Mond and his potential, we don't know yet how much of a drop-off there will be for Clemson defensively. They'll still be a really good defense. We know that. They probably won't be. I say probably. I won't be shocked if they are, but they probably won't be the best defense in the country again like they were last year. So how much of a drop-off is there, and especially early in the season? Like, we know the guys who are, you know, the new starters on the defensive front are still really talented, but they're not right now in their careers as good as the guys who were playing two games ago for the national championship. Right. And at this stage of the season, is A&M good enough on offense to exploit that in a way that teams later in the year might not be able to? And so I think that's kind of the X factor here, is A&M's offense against what you would have to say is Clemson's question. Yeah. I wouldn't call it a big concern, but it's a question.
I'd like to
still
see a great game out of Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and look, we've talked
rust,
about this.
Rust, I think,
in
is a fair word.
Yeah, in a Heisman context, you know, we've talked about this idea that when you are the preseason favorite, you're the front runner, you're held to a higher standard than everyone else, and you're expected, especially when you play like he did in the playoff last year.
Yeah.
You're expected to look like a first-team All-American every time you step on the field, and he didn't look that way in the opener. That's fine, because they still scored 52 points and won easily. But if he goes out there in a couple of games where there are more eyes on him, like there will be in this one, and looks above average, he didn't look bad.
No, he said one pick.
And... but, you know, he if he has another game like that, now people are going to start nitpicking him, and they're going to be looking for reasons to go with someone else. And they're probably not going to look for Tua either. Tua's going to get nitpicked plenty as well, but that's just kind of the point of this, is that Trevor Lawrence is under the microscope now in a way that he never was before. He doesn't seem like the type of guy to me that's going to let that kind of pressure get to him.
No.
But yeah, he will be held to a higher standard, and I know this is not about the Heisman. That's not what we're looking at here. But was last week indicative of anything? Or was this just, like we said, just rust?
Well, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is, I don't think, because he's not going to play a lot of second halves. I mean, a lot this
Yeah,
season.
His
I
raw
mean,
numbers
he'll
will
likely
not be,
play this weekend's
yeah,
no, second
right,
half.
No, you're right.
I was curious. I want to put a button on the SEC, put a bow, excuse me, on the SEC before we move to one last thing. I thought Tua looked great. I thought Tua was outstanding. I think he's evolved a lot as a quarterback with his reading of the defense. The CBS broadcast would talk about it a lot last year, and it was fair criticism that he made up his mind a lot last year where he was going to throw pre-snap, and I think that cost him against Clemson in the national championship game. And this, I felt he was reading the defense, and then he was so accurate.
Yeah.
Now, it was just one game in Duke, but I just think those freshman or sophomore tendencies were no longer there.
Well, I think at most positions, but especially at quarterback, you've got to be able to learn, right, in order to get better. And it was so easy for him in that offense for most of the season last year. And they were able to create mismatches and hit big plays constantly. And so he's always looking for the big play. And when they finally got against the types of defenses where you weren't going to be able to get those very often, it was an adjustment. And he didn't make the adjustment. You know, he needed to adjust, but didn't, against Georgia, obviously Clemson. And so he struggled in those games. And I think you're right. One game sample. But you saw him checking down, not trying to hit the deep pass all the time, not throwing into coverage 30, 40 yards downfield, but instead taking the guy who's uncovered 10 yards downfield, moving the chains, and let's keep going.
And it
going.
Was a read of the defense after the snap.
It was, yeah.
And I think even the LSU game, as one-sided as it was, there was like a drop, couple drop potential picks or off the fingertips, and he made the mistake. Similar mistakes he made against Clemson, Georgia, he also made in the LSU game. He just didn't get burned.
Remember the LSU game? He went into that game having not thrown a pick that year. Right. And then in the first half, he threw his first one. It was a ball. I believe it was Judy was the receiver. He was double covered. He threw it anyway. It got picked by LSU, but the guy's momentum took him to the ground inside the 5-yard line. Alabama ends up holding three and out, yeah. And they get the ball back at midfield, scored a touchdown. So it ended up working out. And that was another one of those things. Like, even when he made mistakes, they were so good.
The defense bailed him out, right?
Exactly. And that obviously didn't happen in the biggest games they played at the end.
So one thing I want to talk about is sort of FPI, the adjustments that were made after week one. That's something we talk about in the handicapping world. You don't want to overreact, yep. Things like that. So where is FPI reacting the most?
Yeah, so if you look at three divisions that change favorites, so you have to ask that question. Is FPI overreacting? Now, just understanding what FPI is.
So three
is.
Divisions changed.
Three Power 5 divisions.
They're forecasting who are going to win it are now different
changed
than they were.
Changed from preseason to week one.
Than a week ago. Okay.
Yeah, so let me throw them out there first. So the Pac-12 North, I don't think a big surprise, because it was pretty much a deadlock. Oregon was very, very slightly favored ahead of Washington, and Oregon loses to Auburn in a game that I don't think was a whole lot different from the expectation. They Correct. Lost a close game. A lot of people thought they would. FPI thought they would. Mm-hmm. And then Washington, while it was an FCS opponent, it was a good FCS opponent, a very good FCS opponent. And Washington won that game handily. And so it was just enough to move Washington to the favorite there. Both Big Ten divisions changed favorites. Now, the West shouldn't be any surprise, because the way that Wisconsin looked compared to Iowa, which looked okay.
Right.
And then the rest of the teams in that division, obviously Northwestern losing, Purdue losing, Nebraska didn't look good, Minnesota 7-point win over an FCS team, a good FCS team, but they only won by 7. So that one's not shocking. The one that'll catch most people is the Big Ten East, where Penn State is now the favorite FBI. And now, one thing that people probably aren't aware of that's important to point out is that going into the season, FPI already had Penn State as even with Ohio State.
That's
Those
remarkable.
Teams were very similar coming in, and given that Penn State's performance was more impressive in week one, they went past Ohio State, but basically just pulled ahead from an even starting point, and they went above Michigan, which obviously didn't play up to expectation, and so that's where we are right now. But it's FPI recognizes that for all the data that you put in to get those preseason ratings, it's not as valuable as what actually happens on the field. And so you see some pretty big adjustments made when we have actual on-the-field results that have to be reacted to. And week one is always the most extreme because you have a one-game sample.
That's what I was going to ask. And later on, second game, does it change that much?
Yeah, I mean, you'll still see some decent size changes after week two. But see, what starts to happen is that your week one results also become retroactively fitted to what you know, the additional information you get about the first opponent. So
Correct.
If the team that you played week
one
ends up looking good in week two, then that adds value to what you did against them week one. If they
right.
look worse, then what you did week one gets de-emphasized.
Diminished.
So there you go.
Seth Walder talked about it on the show yesterday, Daily Wagers, that he thinks Cincinnati and UCLA is a correlated parlay. You can they like both teams, so to speak. And week two is the one week where you can really kind of take advantage of it since they played each other week one.
Yeah, and that makes sense because if, I mean, they played a close game
yeah.
Against each other. And if they're both better than people think, well, you're not going to learn that by them playing each other.
One team beating the other, right.
Yeah, so, I mean, just watching the game, though, If you like UCLA,
I do.
I think part of it needs to be because of the guys who were out with injury.
Joshua Kelly.
Yeah, Joshua Kelly is a big one.
But it's also just the situation, the environment. I mean, quarterback played horribly, but they also had a scoop and score that was nullified.
Yep.
So it's just the whole first game thing. I'm still believing Chip Kelly. Now, we'll see. If they stink for the next couple games, then I'm off that bandwagon.
Yeah, the quarterback was the big concern for me. For UCLA in that game, which is that he didn't look like he had improved any from last season, and you're expecting that.
I certainly talked a lot about it,
and who knows? I mean, there have been many teams that looked shaky week one, who by October have looked really good, and I'm not ready. Despite what you saw in week one from both teams, I am not ready to say that Oklahoma is going to blow out UCLA.
I agree. I don't think Oklahoma is that great. I think their defense still stinks.
That was another question. So Oklahoma was one of those teams week one. There were three good examples of this. There might have been more, but actually there were four. Florida State was another one. There were teams that were just fired out of the gate and looked great for pretty much the first quarter. And then the rest of the game went completely different. And you're wondering, okay, what do I make of this? And so, like I said, Oklahoma... The offense, we knew what they were going to do to Houston. That was,
Lincoln Riley
Hurts was great, but
he was going to put Hurts in.
But
a
that
lot
was
of
a bad defense. Session.
Yeah, a lot of situations that looked good.
The question was the Oklahoma defense, and they allowed, I think, one first down the first four possessions. But then after that, Houston kind of did to them what we were expecting, and so you're like, okay, are they really improved or what happened?
Oklahoma's improved on D, I think, because they couldn't get any worse.
You can't get worse,
and they
you
have a new DC, and they lost Venables a few years ago. And they had some growing pains with the D, so I think they're going to be better. It's just they're not going to be good.
Yeah, but Florida State, 31 points in the first half, and look at Kendall Briles, this offense, James Blackman looks so comfortable, and then they get shut out in the second half. So what do you make of that? Ohio State, first 8 minutes of that game, they look like they're on par with Clemson and Alabama, but then they don't score a point in the next 30 minutes. And... what do you make of that? We're going to learn about them a lot more this week against Cincinnati.
Sure.
And then the other one that jumped out at me, which is it's not a concern because I'm pretty confident that they're really good on offense, but Georgia, touchdown, 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 first three drives against Vanderbilt, didn't score another touchdown the rest of the game.
Oh, I'm aware. I gave that pick out on this podcast column, two sports centers, Daily Wagers, my best bet, radio, other radio hits throughout the country that I did. And they couldn't get a foot on fourth down twice. They get stuffed. They give up 6 points, and they're not going to cover 22 until I get a late strip fumble and field goal. Sweat job.
They got it done.
They got it done.
But that's the fun part about week two is that for all the places where you get fooled in week one, thinking you learned something, but you were misled, there are also situations like those where you got a little bit of both sides and you're not sure what to make out of it and We'll learn more about all those teams this week.
I know. A lot of this just like, all right, like a Georgia example, like, all right, they're up at half. Like, all right, let's just get out of here with the win and go home. And
So going back to Penn State, the Big Ten East.
Right.
Okay. So Ohio State, I can't extrapolate the first 8 minutes and say that's what Ohio State is. I can't ignore what happened for the next two quarters after that when Florida Atlantic outscored them. And so I don't really come away from that game feeling a whole lot different about Ohio State either way.
Still to be determined.
They basically
with a lot of
did what I would expect them to do to an overmatched opponent. Penn State, consider the competition, but they were much more dominant than I expected them to be. How much can you read into that? That's hard to say. Not shocked Michigan struggled. I actually like Michigan to win big this week.
Really? Over Army?
Yeah. Army, it appeared last week. If we aren't fooled by the one-game sample, it appeared that they took a step back, which you would expect a program like that's not, they're not.
We'll see.
They're not able to plug and play. Like when you lose
maybe Rice
a lot of
just
key
studied
guys,
this thing for like 6 months. Who
you
knows?
Never know with week one, but Michigan looking as sloppy as they did, and they had some self-inflicted wounds that made that score look closer than it should have been.
Because how are they going to run on
that
defense?
Athletically, it's such a mismatch.
No, I agree. No,
but
I'm not.
It was when Army played Oklahoma last year
took
too.
Them to overtime.
I just didn't see, I didn't see Army against Rice having that same ability to do what they did a year ago when they kept the ball for like 45 minutes and Kyler Murray couldn't get on the
field.
They
were pathetic against Rice.
They should have lost.
They went for it on fourth down on their own 11.
They could have lost is probably
yeah. The way to say. I mean, but the guy missed two chip shot field goals as well.
Yep.
All right, my man. Look, always good talking about everything. We'll talk about the Dodgers off air. This is a college football podcast. Kenley Jansen's still the closer.
Yeah.
Even last night he almost blew it. I get a 3-run.
Yep. Lead. Yep.
But always good catch up, man. It's fun. It's interesting, and we'll do much more throughout the season.
You got it.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening, and also remember Daily Wager now on ESPN2, 6 to 7 Eastern. We also have a Sunday morning show launching this Sunday, 9 a.m. Eastern, so 9 to 10. It'll be on ESPN News in September, so a little bit of jumping around. So the 9 a.m. show is on E! News in September, then we'll go to ESPN 2, and then the Monday show, Daily Wager, 6 to 7 Eastern, will be on ESPN News as well because of Monday Night Football moving everything around, and then Tuesday through Friday on ESPN 2. Thanks to John Murray, thanks to Brad Edwards, and obviously thanks to Matt Humans for their insight and good feedback on everything from their point of view. And we'll have more plays on ESPN.com's chalk section. I did well, 4-1 last week. Everett Preston did well as well. And Phil Steele on there as well. We have some analytics people as well. So a lot of fun stuff out there on all platforms. And we appreciate everyone taking their time because football season, a lot more fun with a little action in it.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.